All right, you're back on the Cancer Project with Cancer and Company. For over four decades, the amazing Kreskin has dramatized the unusual power of the human mind with a rare combination of wit and showmanship. Kreskin, who has performed for the likes of royalty and presidential families, has also made well over 500 television appearances, in addition to those that he's a host of his own highly rated series and specials. And he's on the phone with us now. Are you there, Kreskin?
Jack, I'm fine. You're calling me from out in Phoenix, Arizona?
Yeah, we're actually in Tempe, Arizona, right outside of Phoenix.
I've been out in Tempe, Arizona. That's why this is one of my favorite states, not only performing for a lot of corporate affairs there, but I have been on the desert camping in the middle of the summer, hiding away from the audiences and civilization. I just love that part of the country.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place to live. The weather's great. I can't imagine myself anywhere else, to be honest with you.
You have a title, Vampire Radio?
Yes, that's correct.
I know you're on the interviewing, but you got to give me the background on how you came up with the term Vampire Radio.
I was getting ready to get into the internet broadcasting business, and I wanted something, quite frankly, that was very catching and would make people stop for a second and listen. Vampires have always been a center of curiosity for me, and it was also the audience that I wanted to attract. So
it's ironic because my two favorite characters in all of fiction, and I read a great deal. I'm sitting in my library and in one of the houses here on the grounds, and it's a house I built just for my library, which is almost 9,000 books now, and I have shelf upon shelf of books of vampire stories,
yes.
But you know, my two favorite characters are the two most popular characters in fiction history, and that's Dracula and Sherlock Holmes. There have been more Sherlock Holmes movies and more movies based on the theme of Dracula than any other subject character. Almost 200, I believe, as far as Sherlock Holmes is concerned. Of course, Dracula is the definitive vampire, but I always say half-heartedly that if I ever came back, it would be as a vampire. Now, don't misunderstand. I don't like blood, but I love, like you, I love the night. I'll bet you do love the
yes,
night.
Yes, I do. Yes,
and you know, because of my work dealing with the areas of parapsychology and as a mentalist, telepathic phenomena and so forth, I've always remarked to college audiences that so many of those themes were part of the embroidery of Gothic horror stories. I mean, the vampire had hypnotic powers, had telepathic abilities, and Edgar Allan Poe was fascinated with mesmerism, which of course preceded hypnotism or what have you. So, you know, it's almost like the Gothic horror stories embraced phenomena that today we're trying to look at from a scientific viewpoint, but, you know, still has retained its romance. I'm not an actor, but I think the reason I got immediately attracted when I got your email and saw the name of your webpage is that a couple months ago, a man named Dante Tomasello, who's a playwright and a director, he'd done a movie a couple of years ago which got a lot of good critical review, like in some of these foreign festivals and what had called Desecration, but it didn't get great distribution. But he came to me. He had written a new movie dealing with an evil character. He's a monster. This healer,
yeah.
This minister, and who had hypnotic abilities. So he said they asked me if I would look over the character and maybe give them some commentary. Well, don't you know, Chuck? I met with the crew about a month ago, and I'm sitting in the office talking about my love of horror movies, great horror movies. I'm describing scenes, and he's making notes on them, saying, oh my God, I didn't realize that scene existed in an old movie. And on and on we went.
Yeah.
He said, would you read a couple of pages of this character? I gave him some critical comments on how he might reshape it. And I said, well, I'm not an actor, I'll read it anyway. Well, the crazy thing is that the movie, which is called Horror, is going to be filmed in January, and they've given me the starring role in the movie. Now, can you imagine a non-actor, person who's spent his life reading people's thoughts, and now I'm going to be playing this horrendous character?
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all. You have an amazing persona, and the people know you, and it's probably fitting.
You know, if my friends say, you know, this is an evil guy, they say, oh, Kreskin, it'll be easy. It'll be easy for you. But I'm it is fascinating because this life, as you know, and I hope our listeners learn, is an adventure. This is not a rehearsal. You got to savor whatever you can in life, so long as you don't do any harm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, early in your career, you were a believer and practitioner of hypnosis, and today you're not. What changed with that?
It's because Chuck, I honestly came to believe and realize that there is no hypnotic state or trance or special condition. I had my late teens and early 20s, I had an office with a Dr. Harold Hansen, who was a very prominent psychologist here in the East Coast, as a clinical man, a PhD. He had seen me perform as a hypnotist, and he said, I want you to work with my patients. I didn't even have a degree in psychology then, so I would see sometimes as many as 30 patients a week. And, you know, you don't get that kind of apprenticeship in any job today. And it was an extraordinary experience, those 8 years. But after a while, we usually met very late Wednesday night, around midnight. He'd get finished with his patients, and he'd come in and say, and what he used me for was to help him with some of his patients using supposedly hypnosis to motivate them, remove some of their fears, and all that. And sometimes I'd be getting results with people, Chuck, that didn't seem like they were deeply hypnotized. And I said, Harold, I don't know what's going on. So-and-so, he's now going into church in the middle of the crowd, sitting in the middle when he's afraid of crowds, and he wasn't that good a subject, but he seems to be losing his fear of crowds, things like that. And I started to realize that it wasn't really people in a hypnotic trance, but it was the use of suggestion, my creating belief and persuading them. And then I decided in my performances to see what could I do if I didn't go through the mumbo-jumbo of telling people, I want you to relax, you're getting drowsy, you're getting sleepy, you hear all of this, and see what I could do without all that. And I found, it took many months, I found I could create the same response. Then scientists have tried to show what changes there are in the brain when the person is supposedly under hypnosis. Turns out the person's brainwave patterns are that of a person wide awake. So I no longer believe hypnosis exists. It's been written about a lot of psychology texts, and I have an offer of $100,000 to anyone who can prove a hypnotic trance. I went on trial some years ago, a hypnotist intended to prove before a jury there was a hypnotic trance and win my offer, and I won the trial. I'm not saying that I hypnotized the judge or the jury, but that doesn't mean that people are faking. It means that they really aren't anything. They're wide awake. It's just, Chuck, if you're watching a good horror movie, and they were years ago called Chillers, because you could have watched a movie in a heated theater, and you got so frightened, you got goosebumps on your flesh. Now, isn't that damn fascinating that the way you were thinking could change the surface of your skin? So the mind is a very fascinating thing, and suggestion is the key. But I appreciate you bringing that up. That's something that's a very much serious side of my life.
Uh-huh. Additionally, have you ever seen or experienced a spirit or ghost?
Well, but you've done a lot of discussions on those, haven't you?
That's why I thought it tied in with tonight.
Fascinating. Is that the theme tonight, some of the discussion tonight?
Yeah, somewhat.
I have been to many houses that have had histories of hauntings, including the Octagon House, which is a house in Washington, D.C., that had an apparent murder and suicide where someone threw themselves down the steps. This is years ago, a century ago, and held seances in those houses. And while I've never seen or felt there was necessary proof of a deceased spirit appearing, I do think, I've come to believe, Chuck, that some homes do carry a presence or an energy that has to go back to some other period or some other incident. Just too many damn things have happened. I've brought people into houses where they didn't even know that anything had happened, and they've sensed tremendous chills and discomfort in certain areas where it turns out murders had taken place. So while I have not seen a ghost, and I don't see evidence of anyone coming back, physics says that matter is neither created nor destroyed. Energy is neither created nor destroyed. So maybe the energy of a deceased, its presence remains to some degree. I believe in the hereafter. Now I've done dramatic seances on television to show how through natural means things can be created. And last Halloween on the E Channel, the Howard Stern Show, the entire hour as the only guest. And that's an experience, by the way, Chuck, being with Howard. I've been out with him for a week, and of course my social life, as you know, is in smithereens. Well, but we had a table tilting seance where people rested their hands on tables and started to concentrate. And the tables, these were strangers, tables started rocking and moving and slamming across the set. And but at the same time, it really wasn't ghosts. It was energy created by the concentration of the people. But mm-hmm. you could understand in another era, in the last century, something like this happened could have easily been interpreted as some violent poltergeist or sure. ghost, you know, making themselves known. And by the way, this Octagon House in Washington, I held a seance on the air a few years ago, and Chuck, I can't remember how many attended. It must have been at least 48. There were four people at each table. We had candles at each table. And this was around midnight, and it was very dim, and this was broadcast live. And I tell you, suddenly, half the people started screaming as they turned and saw a figure fleeing and literally toppling down this almost spiral staircase. And no one was really there, but it's interesting what they perceive. On the other side, I got to say, is something humorous. A few years ago in New Hampshire, I held a seance at a house that had been owned by a couple of brothers who, early part of this country, were fake mediums. They really weren't legitimate. They were bad fakes. But we accrued a number of famous writers, including Walter B. Gibson, who's no longer with us, but he created a character in fiction called The Shadow that was very popular in radio, and he wrote a lot of books. And Gibson I knew well because he had known Houdini and others. He was a great writer. So we're all sitting, Chuck,
yeah.
late at night, and this is New Hampshire in a remote area, not traffic. I mean, this was a dark October, a dreary night in New England. And suddenly, as we're sitting around the table, we saw this red glow floating around the room. Well, some of the gals screamed. A couple of the men jumped from the table. I hate to tell you, Chuck, it turns out outside the house, a police car had stopped someone, and the red light was winding around.
Oh, yeah?
So you can't... sometimes the results are created by things we don't anticipate.
Okay. Now, Harry Houdini, he spent the greater part of his later years looking for evidence of an afterlife, and he never found anything. What ideas do you have of an afterlife?
You know, interestingly enough about Houdini, he never found evidence of it. He exposed a lot of fake mediums. In all fairness, he was at times just as dishonest as the mediums. Walter Gibson, whom I mentioned to you earlier, knew him very, very well, and said, Kreskin, Houdini often embarrassed these mediums when he'd sit in their establishment, and they were trying to have a seance, and said, you've got luminous gowns hidden in a chair in the corner there, or you've got all this equipment hidden there. And a lot of them who didn't have something like that would say, you're lying. And Houdini had the press there, and they go over to these old Victorian chairs and rip out the bottom, and there was phosphorescent stuff and what have you. What Houdini had done was to send Rose Mackenberg, who was a private lady detective, weeks ahead of time, before Houdini ever came into cities, and she'd go to these establishments and attend seances, and sometimes in the dark, she'd reach under her coat and stuff into the chairs this luminous stuff so that Houdini could frame them months later. So yes, it's true, Houdini never found evidence of any spirit communication. He wanted to communicate with his mother, but he was he was getting too much publicity, proving everything was false. Do I think there's a hereafter? Yes, I absolutely do. I'd be a hypocrite because my religion is based on a belief in the hereafter. Now the question is, you don't call them spiritualists anymore. As you know, Chuck, they're called channelers.
Yes.
You see them a lot on television and what have you. And I would be the last person alive to say that these people are all frauds. I think some of them are very legitimate. I think some of them are sincere. But it's hard to say. It could be one of three things. One, either they're faking all this, and there are fakers in this field, unfortunately. Two, how do we know if they're communicating with the world beyond? And you, Chuck, are sitting there, or I sitting there, and say, oh my God, that is exactly what my grandmother did, and so forth. If you knew in your mind that what they were describing was true, then how do you know they weren't reading your thoughts telepathically rather than contacting the world beyond?
Exactly.
But I want to say one more thing. Before, and some of your listeners may be skeptics, you got to look at things questionably, never stop asking questions. But let me give you one piece of advice and warning. If you're with a channeler and you want to believe in them, or you believe in them, or you think they're legitimate, or you may not think so, and they are suddenly talking to someone you know who is deceased and saying, you know, they're asking about, as a kid, did you have in the closet such and such a toy, and you say yes, then simply ask the channeler, oh, by the way, ask them what their best friend's name was. If the person is communicating, they would be happy to tell you this, Chuck. They would be happy for the channeler to tell the person, or say, oh, what was my grandmother's address? Certainly in dying in a spirit form, they would not have forgotten their address. And that's not trying to embarrass the channeler. That's giving them the opportunity to prove that they are really talking to someone who's passed on.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Chuck, I gotta tell you something. I could talk to you for hours because I like the questions, and I also got to mention to you that if I can just give a slight plug,
people
might want to look at my web page, which is theamazingkreskin.com. Last fall, USA Today singled it out as the web page of the week, and Entertainment Weekly did a piece on it because of that situation dealing with a cemetery. I don't know if you've seen that, Chuck.
The piece on the cemetery.
Yeah, I will not talk about it, but if you go to AmazingKreskin.com, you'll see what it's dealing with, so you'll know that I have a tremendous romance with the hereafter and the spirit world.
Okay. I'm thrilled to have you on this evening, so feel free to...
Chuck, I'll also mention to you that there is a new game out. We've done it a lot on television, called The Celtic Oracle. And the Celtic Oracle, if anyone's interested, it's called Kreskin Celtic Oracle. They can go to Amazon.com, the itself, games and books, and Amazon.com has the information about it. But I can also mention to you that in about a month, my 10th book is coming out. It's dealing with predictions that over 90 people have made about the next 100 years. People like Roger Ebert, the film critic of what's going to happen in the movie industry, and his predictions already got in the news. Regis Philbin and Howard Stern and Supreme Court justices and Seinfeld. So maybe when the book comes out, we could talk again, and we'll spend more time about the next 100 years.
yes. Back during the O.J. Simpson case, you offered a session with O.J. in which you would read his thoughts and serve as a conduit of truth.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was sincere. Everybody thought, smiled, because we sent the telegram to one of his dream team lawyers. By the way, Chuck, I hope that you and the and our listeners don't need a lawyer today, because if you do, you better pray that you're in Florida.
Yeah, they're all down there right
now. I don't think there's anything, and I've, of course, been embroiled in something about the results of the election, but as far as... That's not. We're not going to be able to reveal that until it's all over with. But yeah, I offered O.J. I didn't even want a television crew. I just wanted he and I to walk through the area without any commentary, and I would expound on what vibrations and impressions I got. And you know, I don't know why he would have turned me down, because he's made every effort to get on all the shows.
Well, yeah, he's looking
everywhere else. He's wanted to espouse. Of course, I got a kick out of Jay Leno's monologue the next night. Jay Leno came on the air and said, you know, we've known Kreskin for years. He reads people's thoughts. You mean he's the only one that doesn't know if O.J. did it or not?
Well, yeah, what is your prediction on O.J.?
Well, no, the prediction I have is on the election, the presidential. I did something insane. And, you
the
know,
safes.
To be in this business, you take chances, but I have logged in a safe in New York City, actually in the studio of the Howard Stern Show. It was done last August. An envelope, a letter, which has what I believe would be the results of this presidential election. When I logged it in, I came in with a detective from Bergenfield, New Jersey, Detective Ken Otto, whom I do not know. He was found, and he's a very prominent, he's a detective, by the way, that evidently put the mayor of Bergenfield behind bars. So you know this is a courageous detective if you're going to fool around politicians. Anyway, he is the one that actually sealed the envelope and put it in the safe, and he's the one other person alive who knows what my prediction is. I took an awful chance, though. I got a little bit crazy. I said, I'm so certain of my prediction that I made a checkout that's in the with the envelope, and it's made out to Howard Stern. If I fail, he will cash it and turn it over to 12 charities. The check is of my own money of $100,000. So this, anybody who says, well, this is just a 50-50 chance, it's a damn expensive 50-50 chance. I had made a prediction, as Howard announced last week, 2 years ago on CNN. I've been on every New Year's Day on CNN commenting on what I think is going to happen in the coming year. And in 1999, on New Year's Day, I said something which got me heavily criticized by the press in New York. They said, he's crazy. She's not even thinking about such a thing. It wasn't even a rumor then. I said that Hillary Clinton would run for office in the United States Senate in New York State and win.
Yep.
And at that point, she hadn't even thought about it. A year later, she announced it, and of course, she's won. Well, the prediction that sealed that envelope only deals, the money part only deals with who will win the election. I've also taken a shot at who, how many states the candidate will carry. But I got to tell you, Chuck, when I sat, now I was back from working in Florida, so I was home the night of the elections, and I'm sitting here in the middle of the night, and without giving any hint as to who I have predicted, at a certain point I pick up the phone, I call my PR man and say, oh, this is damn exciting. I was correct. Then I sit and see what unfolds that entire night. I got to tell you, Chuck, this has been a nightmare even for yours truly. I almost wish that they would both just forget about it, let Clinton go on being with the president, because they can't seem to make up their mind, even with the announcement a few minutes ago that I guess the...
Bush has been certified, yes.
Bush has been certified, and yet probably we won't know until the 18th. And I get a kick out of the press saying, you know, this shows that the great conflict and the wars between two part factions of the United States citizenry. Heck, I travel all over this country. The United States citizens right now couldn't give a damn. It's two political parties that are at war. The average citizen in this country says, let's get the damn thing over with and move on with life. They're not fighting in the streets and what have you. But it does show you what can happen when you have the lawyers that did not die on the Titanic all ending up in Florida working for both parties. And the one thing that I can say for sure, because I can tell it in the taste of the American public, whoever gets in, even if I'm wrong, whoever gets in, they're going to have a tough time, because there's going to be a cloud over their head because of all the mechanics and the subterfuges they've been going through all these weeks. It's not going to be a warm welcome. Oh, by the way, when the presidential election prediction is opened, after all this is over on the Stern Show, I'm also going to publicly state who I believe will be the next president after these 4 years. I'm going to make that public.
That would be interesting.
Chuck, I don't know where this half hour is gone. by the way, I got to tell you something, and listen, guys and gals, all of you listening in. I'm not superstitious. I'm not saying I believe in all the occult, and as far as astrology is concerned, I treat it like perfume. I can smell it, but I can't quite swallow it. But, you know, I always say to people, millionaires don't believe in astrology. Billionaires do. And what I mean by that is billionaires take great chances. They take exciting risks in their lives. Those are the real entrepreneurs. And I have a feeling, Chuck, that I am talking to an entrepreneur right now because of your creativity in putting together Vampire Radio. I wish you continued success.
One of my guests in the studio is pointing at me saying, yes, yes, yes. Vince, hello, Ramon.
Chuck, let's just say to be continued. I'll probably talk to you in about 3 or 4 weeks when the book comes out.
That would be wonderful. Visit www.amazingkreskin.com for all of his past, present, and future endeavors, and look for his game, The Celtic Oracle, on Amazon.com.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thanks for being my guest this evening.
Talk to you soon, Chuck. God, I foresee.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, The Amazing Kreskin. Boy, very lots to talk about there.
Oh, yeah. Interesting, right. Though. But
yeah, no, very, very thrilled he could join us. We got to go to a break. We'll be back after a word from these sponsors.